Not the EFL. It's the Football League podcast that simply refuses to acquiesce to all this Oasis talk. Coming up, Carabao Cup sets aplenty, Blackpool are looking for a new boss, and previews galore, powered by Quinbet. This is What the EFL. And we're back with you for another week of Football League plus Carabao Cup chat. This time around, it's me, Matt Davis-Adams. I'm joined by Adrian Clark. Good morning, Clarky. It's the afternoon.
It's good afternoon. It's good afternoon. Plenty going on, isn't there? Let's get to it.
Surely there is. Sam Parkin's back with us too. You okay, Sam?
Very good, mate. Good afternoon to you both.
Likewise. Whatever time of day it is for you listening, we wish you a good one. Before we get going then, we are delighted to say we've partnered up with Quinbet for another season, and to celebrate that, they've enhanced their UK welcome offer, where you can now get a free bet up to £50 and 50 free spins. It is for new customers at sign up only. Check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions/sports-up-2-50. It's 18 plus. And remember, always gamble responsibly. Check out gamcare.org. They are the leading provider for gambling support and they run the National Gambling Helpline. All right, we're going to start with some midweek league cup tales. So we are recording on Wednesday lunchtime, but plenty happened on Tuesday night in the Carabao Cup. Not least last season's semi-finalist Middlesbrough being humiliated on their own patch. They lost 5-0 to Stoke at the Riverside. The Potters scored four times in the second half. And Adrian, given that all five of their shots on target went in, I would suggest that it wasn't the finest game of Smoggy Stopper Solbrin's career.
No, maybe not. It's a weird game, this one, because I think it looks disastrous for Middlesbrough, and some of the defending was not necessarily poor goalkeeping, just poor defending. But Middlesbrough had enough chances to win the game 6-5. You know, it wasn't a complete car crash of a performance. So yeah, they'll be disappointed. But I think it's one of those they need to just brush off quickly, Borough, and not let it fester too much. They had a lot of problems down their left back side. Matt Clark had a little bit of a shocker when coming across onto that side of the field as well. But in general, I just put it down to a really clinical, energised performance from Stoke, who were lifted, weren't they, by a few kids. Tezgel, the 18-year-old, scored, could have had another. Moran got three assists, which is brilliant for him. And obviously, Lewis Kumas, son of Jason, signed from Liverpool, had a cracking game as well. He scored as well. So, great night for Stoke, particularly the youngsters. For Borough, just try and forget about it. Just write it off. It's not the be-all and end-all.
No, not by any means. Sam, Millwall shocked at the Den by Leyton Orient, two clubs of your acquaintance to varying degrees. Danny Jay got the only goal of the game with what was the only shot on target. You can do the Millwall crisis talk if you like, or you can just pour some love on Richie Wellens and co.
Yeah, well, it was a most welcome win for Orient, having lost by the odd goal in every league game, I think, to this point. So, yeah, fantastic result for them in what looked like a pretty drab game. I think Neil Harris said as much afterwards, that none of his fringe players have given him a problem ahead of the weekend. Scored in both the games so far, Dan Adji. I think there's definitely a player in there, but it was about the defensive resilience limiting Millwall to next to nothing. I think Beckle's getting a lot of plaudits this morning. Abiro, a young player, 19-year-old midfielder as well, I think has had a terrific start to the season and was very good again last night. So, yeah, no concerns really about Orient improving as the season goes on. They've been involved in some low margin games where the goalkeeper's made a couple of errors as well. So that was big for him, Hemmings, to get a clean sheet last night against a London rival. So a great victory, and Millwall can concentrate on the league.
Yeah, they might have to concentrate on it pretty hard, Clarky. They've got 1 point in it so far. We thought that they would maybe struggle a little bit. Eight changes for this game, as Neil Harris said, Sam's alluded to. He's going to make eight changes again at the weekend, probably after that. But it might be a long old season for them at this rate.
Yeah, it's fine margins, isn't it? They've sort of narrowly been defeated and lost points when they could have picked up some. But yeah, it can quickly become something a lot worse, can't it? But Neil Harris, very open, isn't he? And it was interesting to see his quotes after the game. Said, look, I picked the team on minutes. Basically said, I've got players on my back, agents on my back. I've got everyone saying, give me some game time. So I did. And I should have picked the team to win the match rather than just to accommodate these people. But yeah, I think for a lot of the new faces, they've obviously got to learn the Millwall way. The thing is with Neil Harris, if they don't play the Millwall way, he won't have them sticking around for long, even if they're relatively new signings. So they've got to buy in to what he wants of them. I'm sure that will come.
With a nod to Fleetwood for beating opposition from a higher division for the second round in a row as they put out Rotherham, the final game I wanted to touch on saw League Two Barrow knocking out Championship Derby County on penalties to reach the third round for the first time since 1967. James Collins and Caden Jackson missed their penalties before Paul Farman saved from Craig Forsyth to clinch it. Sam, Paul Warne, on borrowed time? Is that too harsh to say? We know that the Derby fans aren't particularly taken with his style of football. It's not been an amazing start to the season for them. 3 points so far in the league. Host Bristol City at the weekend. He could do with a win there.
Yeah, it's a poor result. I don't think there should be an almighty fallout, given that naturally, as we've already spoken of today, that there's a lot of changes and the focus is never going to be the Carabao Cup for a team like Derby. It's going to be about survival and consolidating in a division this year. But yeah, I mean, they won't be happy. Even that solitary victory over Middlesbrough was obviously achieved when they conceded a lot of chances on their goal, and it didn't look like they did enough to win that game last night. I would suggest that Paul Farman made a brilliant double save in the first half. But other than that, there wasn't, you know, gilt-edged, clear opportunities going begging. So I think more credit to Stephen Clements and his side, who have started with 2 wins out of 3 in the league. I think they've signed good experience. I quite like the look of that side. Be interesting to see how they progress this season. And I think Paul Warne gets more time, given that he achieved the objective last season. But yeah, there's been some harsh words said and written about Derby already this year, considering we're only a couple of games in. But yeah, have to improve. Otherwise, that sentiment towards him will turn and turn quickly.
You'll enjoy this, Matt. My namesake at TalkSport, who you'll all know, sent me some screenshots of Derby message boards or Derby on social media last night. Paul, this is one from Ben Smythe. Paul Warren is an absolute disgrace of a manager. Somehow makes us look like underdogs against effing Barrow. It goes on. Watching a Paul Warren side really does suck all the enjoyment out of watching football, doesn't it? That one's from Stephen. And then there's one here from Bod. Everyone on that pitch has potential to play a brand of football that doesn't make you want to bang your head against bricks. I get it's a results business, but this is horrid. Even when we win, it's painful. Any decent player or agent watches this and runs a mile. So that's a flavour of what Derby fans are feeling at the moment. I guess that, you know, you're doing well not to crack a smile there, Matt, as I read those out.
Absolutely sensational stuff. I feel for Paul Ward because he seems like a good bloke, but yeah, get he out does, there yeah. as quickly as he can. All right, speaking of people getting out of places, we'll do a bit of transfer chat next. Window still open as we record for another couple of games. Lots of stuff going on. Lots of championship talent still being plundered by the Premier League, mainly Ipswich. Adrian, give me a couple of moves that have caught your eye.
Yeah, they're fine, everyone, aren't they? Any decent championship player, Ipswich will have them. Manor Solomon, Spurs to Leeds. It's a loan deal. But yeah, it's a standout, isn't it? Because I think he did pretty well, actually, for Fulham in fits and spurts. He had one spell where he just couldn't stop scoring worldies. He was cutting him from the left and curling him into the far corner. It did dry up for him, but it was enough to earn him the move to Spurs, where he's basically suffered from injuries and it was always going to be hard to be a regular at Tottenham. So yeah, I'm thinking of a Crescencio Somerville replacement, and I don't mind it. I think that's quite a good pickup stylistically. He's that kind of player coming in off the left, looking to score goals. So I'm excited to see what Manuel Solomon can do for Leeds United. And based on what I've seen, I think he'll score goals in the Championship. So that's one to keep your eye on.
Sam, I wanted to get your take on Shrewsbury bringing in Leo Castledine on loan from Chelsea, somebody you and I have seen a bit of. He did play for Chelsea's first team a couple of times last season, made his debut in the League Cup on Tuesday. Highly rated, which makes this a slightly strange one for me to go to a team who look like they're going to struggle in League One. Is he going down the old, at least I'll get some minutes, road?
That seems to be the consensus, doesn't it? There was interest from clubs in higher divisions, I would imagine, and also I've read. So yeah, it's got to be with a view to getting regular game time. And I think historically, going back probably quite a number of years now, Shrewsbury are not a team that have created bundles. And I would imagine that will continue, despite him being you know, a real creative player and a versatile player at that as well. I think he can probably play anywhere across the front. He can probably play as an attacking midfield player and maybe draw the line at a number nine, because he's quite a diminutive player rather than someone who's going to lead the line, I would suggest, in the third tier. But yeah, he's been on the fringes at Chelsea. Incredibly good attitude. Everyone that I've spoken to has said that he's got an incredible desire, works incredibly hard, and he's a creator, and he'll get goals, gets in the box. And I know his dad, so I wish him the very best. And yeah, hopefully he can go on and have a really successful career and get a few goals this season, which I'm sure the Shrewsbury fans will be craving, because they're in short supply at the moment.
Yeah, probably not the most famous person in his family, Clarkie. So his dad, Stuart, played for Wimbledon.
Yeah,
his mum, Lucy, was the former Homes Under the Hammer presenter. And his sister, Kitty, is in EastEnders.
Oh, love it. Okay. Yeah, he's got a lot to live up to then, hasn't he? Like loan managers, okay? You hear, I don't know who Chelsea's loan manager is, but I think they have an obligation sometimes. I'm not writing this off as a failure, but you've got to pick. It's like a dating app, isn't it? When you're a loan manager, you've got to place players at a place where you think that it might bring the best out of them and bring on their development. It might be backward thinking in terms of going to a side that doesn't create, sticking him in and putting that responsibility on him to do it. But for me, if I was the player, I'd be looking to go to a much more attack-minded team there. You know, these loans are really important parts of your career, and it seems a slightly odd choice. Couple more to pick out on transfers very quickly. A couple of defenders. Angelo Ogbonna left West Ham on a free.
You picked this out purely because it's the most Watford signing ever.
It's so Watford, isn't it? It's really Watford. But, you know, I quite like a lot of their centre-halves, and they've started the season brilliantly. But I like this from Tom Cleverley, just beefing up the numbers. West Ham fans love Ogbonna. So they were happy for him to have another year. He got released. He's been picked up by Watford. And Joe Worrell, who's obviously seen his career stall, he's still only 27, is going to go to Burnley, where I'd imagine he'll get lots of game time, because they haven't got many players left, have they, at Turf Moor?
Very good meat and potatoes Championship centre half, Joe, leaves Forest. As a legend of the club, it's fair to say he's the man who lifted the trophy in the playoff final. He won the Turkish Cup last season as well. So yeah, good luck to Joe in his latest adventure. Anything else from you, Sam?
No.
Fine. In that case, we'll move on. There's going to be some massive moves as the week rounds down. I'm sure we'll run through them next week and decide who's won and lost the transfer window. That's always a good staple for us. Let's have a quick chat about Blackpool there. They wish Neil Critchley the best in his future endeavours. His second spell as Tangerine's top boy came to an end last week after suffering back-to-back defeats in their opening League One game. Sam, it never seemed a particularly happy remarriage after the initial divorce. Obviously, the way that he left them left a bit of a sour taste for a lot of Blackpool supporters. The fact that they beat Blackburn at Ewood in the League Cup without him would maybe suggest that some of the players weren't too fussed either.
Possibly. I think, yeah, maybe the way he left previously plays a little bit of a part. I think it's probably more akin to what Clarkie just went through, RE Derby. It's probably a style of play thing. And amusingly, seeing them go to Cambridge in the subsequent fixture under Richard Keogh and drawing 4-4. Some brilliant goals, actually, there. Amongst, I think, Carl Joseph and Ballard.
Great Aloney. Dink, wasn't it? Joseph, I love the little dink.
Yeah, brilliant. In pouring rain, tremendous scenes. The only sore note was it was Lavery, previously of Blackpool, I think, who got a double for Cambridge. So they've certainly picked up in an attacking sense. That is probably a game which they would have closed out under Neil Critchley, and probably not one that they would have collapsed in, but you can argue that they wouldn't have scored four goals. So I think that's probably what the Blackpool fans crave, just a bit more excitement. Where they turn to next, I don't think it's done yet. We'll have to wait and see. But, you know, Richard Keogh, for my money, is someone that could probably add a lot of value as a coach or as a manager in the future. He's played a hell of a lot of games. I think he's played during a period and for teams that want to play good football. I mean, he played that pivotal role in the sides latterly, receiving the ball probably off the goalkeeper in dangerous territory and progressing it up the pitch. So I'll be interested to see what he can do, but maybe it's a a coaching brief for him in the short term with someone more senior coming in?
Well, he only came in himself in the summer, which I always think is slightly interesting, a kind of Van Nistelrooy at Man United-esque situation. Had a quick look at the runners and riders, Clarkie. Ryan Lowe, Pete Wild, Brian Barry Murphy amongst the contenders. Be surprised if Lowe dropped into League One. To me, this stinks of Michael Appleton, welcome back for a third spell.
No, I don't think so. Not this time. No, they won't go there again. Pete Wild, I think, was quite unlucky to lose his job at Barrow, so he's a good shout. Yeah, Ryan Lowe sounded like he needs a holiday, maybe a longer holiday than just a couple of weeks. So
Pleasure Beach there.
Yeah, there is. This is true. This is true. But yeah, I'm with Sam. I think maybe it's an opportunity for Keogh to sort of have his first foray into coaching.
Barry Murphy's an interesting one because he seems to be getting linked with quite a lot recently, and he's obviously had a period away from the senior game, so that would be interesting because he got a lot of criticism, but quite a few plaudits for the way that he was going about adopting his kind of philosophy at Rochdale. So it looks like he'll be destined for a gig in the Northwest soon because there's a lot of noise coming out of his camp.
Yeah, so he left his position, didn't he, as Man City under 21 coach in the summer. We shall wait and see on that one then. A little new feature that Clarkie dreamed up last week, which we're going to roll with here.
It's really unique,
cutting
isn't
edge.
It, this feature?
Yeah. Nobody's ever thought of this before. Goal of the week, Adrian, that's your shout this week. What have you gone for?
Yeah, as I did my iron in the other night, watched all the goals. Apparently the kids these days don't iron, which was news to me recently. I don't know.
Nor do
where
I.
You stand on that. You don't iron?
Nope.
No.
Nope.
Sam? Yeah, Sam does, surely, a little bit.
Once a month, I would say. Maybe every 6 weeks. Yeah. One item.
Maybe I must be living in the past. But anyway, I quite enjoy watching the goals as I'm ironing. And there were some good ones, particularly in the Championship. Enjoyed Bayo's scissor kick for Watford. Centre-half for Peterborough, Emmanuel Fernandez. Drove down the middle of the pitch and drove a shot in from about 30 yards. Daisy cutter, absolutely brilliant. But I don't think you can beat Oxford's Mark Harris. 30-yard volley on the run at Ewood Park. I mean, if there are Oxford fans out there that tell me he does this all the time, then please let me know. But I just don't see Mark Harris as that kind of guy. I see him as more of a penalty box finisher, you know, even more of a six yard box guy, someone that works really hard, hasn't got loads of flair. But this was unreal, a sensational hit, and definitely the goal of the week for me.
Nice. Sam, you got the honour of picking the team of the week. Who'd you go for?
Yeah, bearing in mind a couple of the cup results, honourable mention for Barrow and Preston, obviously two wins under Heckingbottom. I know Clark is going to talk about Luton later, so I won't steal his thunder, but yeah, good start for him. But I think we've got to go Sunderland. I know it's obvious, but considering there was a lot of eyes on them against one of the fancied sides in the division, to not concede any chances, let alone try and concede, it is incredible. Romain Mundell coming in for Jack Clark, I think is just perfect, wasn't it, for people that were arriving at the stadium and a little bit down that they've lost their talisman. And Clark, who's been such a terrific player, the player who in essence has come in to replace him on that day, has got the goal. He had 5 attempts. That's more than Burnley's team's total, which I thought was a nice example of how dominant they were. Yet to concede, only Leeds and Middlesbrough faced fewer shots, lowest XG against. They're defending brilliantly, clearly. And I think what we're seeing is a team that are very, very intent on closing and being aggressive from the front of the pitch. Only two teams have won possession more in the final third. So he's not only the manager of the week, he's probably the manager of the start of the season, Regis Lebris.
Yeah, superb.
Regis Lebris. Looking like the big cheese, it would seem. Apologies. I got player of the week, and this is a chance for me to crowbar in a little bit of chat about the game I did on Tuesday night, which was Walsall against Huddersfield, which I put on our group chat might be the lowest wattage fixture in the Carabao Cup this season. Boy, was I wrong. My player of the week is Nathan Lowe of Walsall. So he's on loan from Stoke, 18-year-old striker, England under-19 international, came off the bench at the weekend, got his first start here, missed a sitter, 1-on-1, 0-0 in the first half. Affected him for a little while. In the second half, 1-0 down, they get a penalty. He steps up to take it. Terrible penalty. Straight at the goalie. They go up the other end and score. 2-0, it's all over. You feel him for this poor 18-year-old. He goes and scores twice in about 6 minutes. Two really well-taken goals. And then they go and win the game 3-2. I mean, that's pretty good fortitude, right, for an 18-year-old Clarky to say, have those two setbacks and then still be there to stick a couple away. I was thrilled for the boy.
I love it. Excellent scouting report there from Matt Davis Adams. Yeah, let's look out for this kid.
That must be tricky, right, Sam, when you miss a good chance and then you have a penalty saved. I mean, how long does that play in your head for whilst you're on the pitch as the team striker?
It really can do. Yeah, I think I missed a penalty in the early rounds of the Carabao Cup at that very stadium. And it haunted me on my late night train back to London. I recall it well with my Burger King sobbing into my Whopper. but it did used to affect me. And I think that's the characteristic that the top players have. They don't worry about missed opportunities and they're better than the lads in the lower divisions, the majority of the lads in the lower divisions from dwelling on them. It was a problem for me during periods of my career. I remember Paul Furlong, probably told this anecdote before, asking me what was up with me one day in training after I'd maybe spurned a few opportunities. And he said, don't worry about the ones that don't go in. You scored a brilliant goal a couple of weeks ago against so-and-so. Focus on that. Think about that and only that. Do not give the missed chances a second thought. And from that moment on, I didn't score many goals, but I didn't worry about the missed ones.
Yeah, he sounds like a good bloke.
Good guy. Nutri-Grain and Lucozade in his wash bag every day, which I really enjoyed. Just a nod to the...
Busy Lucozade or the Lucozade sports stuff?
Yeah, I'm fairly sure it was like your orange fizzy. Yeah.
Okay.
The best one.
Wow. Must have been gassy on the training ground. But hey, look, his career speaks for itself. So it obviously served him well. The precursor to Jamie Vardy's kind of Red Bull, perhaps. Some big games coming up this weekend in the EFL. We'll look ahead to them next. Now then, Clarky, Luton and Queen's Park Rangers had so much fun in the Carabao Cup at Loftus Road on Tuesday. They've agreed to do it all again at Kenilworth Road on Friday night. One imagines one of the key differences will be in the two starting lineups.
Yeah, the rematch. Rematch is on. I think Sam's on it, isn't he? Are you there, Sam?
I'm there, mate. Yeah.
I think I saw that on a call sheet somewhere. So yeah, that'd be good. I mean, both teams need points, don't they? Goodness. Luton. Here's one for your research, Sam. 36 shots they've had so far and have scored one. Lowest conversion rate by miles. I think it's, what is it? Less than 3% conversion rate, which is must be so frustrating. And it's Adebayo that's been the guy that's struggled most. He's had the most big chances in the championship. Six across three games and he hasn't tucked any of them away yet. So yeah, it's a big game for him and for Luton and for Rob Edwards. I think they've looked good in flashes, to be honest, particularly at Preston. Yeah, they played some lovely football. But yeah, the defence has tightened up since that opening day mauling by Burnley. They've got some of their big players back now, haven't they? Got McGuinness in. Good signing from Cardiff. Bale gives them good balance, I think, when he plays on the left side of the centre-back. And then you've got a sort of shootout, I guess, for Mengi and Anderson and Burke to play.
Lost
maybe
Benny
on the other
today,
side.
Though. That's another significant departure for them, right? He's gone to Ipswich.
He's gone, has he? Yeah. It did surprise me. They've got Ruel Walters. They've just signed from Arsenal, who can fill that void. From what I've seen of Luton, Ogbeni hasn't had his mind on it, really. He hasn't been the Ogbeni we know he can be. So maybe he knew this move was in the offing. So that might explain that. But yeah, look, they've lost some players, but I think they'll come good, Luton. I do. You know, they're creating plenty. They've just got to get that finishing right. It's kind of the same for QPR. So maybe this is the day where it will be a goal fest, Sam, at Kenilworth. Because QPR have had the most shots on target of any team in the championship. 6.3 a game, which I think is really impressive. No one's putting
more... against Argyle with four men, though.
This is true. I think that definitely slants it. They've had the most crosses. They've had the most corners. Again, playing against nine men was a factor. But, you know, they've still been as front-footed as they can be. Dembele's obviously been sharp, but they lack a finisher. Maybe, you know, this Fry guy can come good. But yeah, I think it could be a good game.
All right, that one is Friday night, as we say. Elsewhere, Steven Schumacher heading back home, or to home park at least, lol. His Stoke side visit his old club, Plymouth. Contrasting fortune, Sam, for these two in the cup in midweek. And it feels like Stoke are on the up. We can't really say the same for Plymouth.
Possibly not in the aftermath of, a bit of a limp performance at Vicarage Road in the cup. But I thought for 20 minutes or so at QPR, I'm clutching to a degree, but they looked quite vibrant. Argyle. They looked like they got a handle of the opposition after QPR had started really fast. And the goal was coming, the Whittaker goal. So to lose Forshaw so soon after was just catastrophic for their chances of getting maximum points. But they dug in. And the goalkeeper obviously made some big saves. I think only Will Norris at Portsmouth has made more saves this season. So they're coming under pressure and they're not creating enough. I think 24 for expected goals. Stoke not much better in that regard, you know, obviously prior to the thumping win in the week. So I'd imagine it's going to be low scoring and tight. But for Stoke, I mean, that's a real boost, getting five goals and five goals from forward players as well. And I think they've had such a collection of forward players, all so inconsistent over time. To find Kumas now, who's maybe going to bring regular goals and consistent performances, I think that's what their fans will be really optimistic and vibrant about, you know, going down to Home Park, which is obviously going to have a little bit extra on it with Schumacher going back there. But yeah, I don't think Plymouth have been maybe as bad as the return to this point. I think they showed in the previous round in the Cup and in the draw at Home Park and in that QPR game that they've signed some talented players. It just may take a little bit of time. But yeah, this is a big game, early part of the season, but this is a big game which Argyle, I'm sure, will be highlighting on the old whiteboard as a possible 3 points.
Yeah, they've got Michael Obafemi in and Dan Grimshaw have Plymouth. Like Grimshaw, goalie from Blackpool. They both played against Watford in the week. A lot of travel for Stoke this week. Middlesbrough Tuesday and Plymouth at the weekend is quite a way to go. In League One, Reading and Charlton meet in Berkshire. The Addicts amongst the early pace setters, whilst Reading's unbeaten start to the league season came to an end at Wrexham last week. And Reading, Clarkie, they're sort of in stasis, aren't they, really, until the takeover gets completed. Rob Coogan, the American, he used to own Wickham, the man who's trying to do that, but everything's on hold, I guess, for Ruben Sellers till then.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's a sort of limbo state, isn't it, for Reading at the moment, who are doing okay, considering they've lost Femi Aziz. He's gone to Millwall for good money. Harvey Nibbs is injured. So they've lost two of their sort of better attack-minded players. And they've been really positive, actually, at the start of this season, playing front foot football, getting lots of shots away. I think that what makes this game interesting is Ruben Sellers against Nathan Jones. It's kind of I reckon Jones, he's got a little bit of beef there with Sellers. He wouldn't admit it, but Sellers came in, didn't he, and sort of said a few things about the style of football, and he ripped up what Jones was trying to build and went with something completely different. So I think there'll be a little bit of beef between these two, which we all love, of course. So yeah, look, but Reading are a good home team. They're very, very strong. I don't think they've lost at home since early March. So, you know, that will give them confidence. The issue they've got is when balls go into the box, Reading, they've got such a young defence that I think they've got problems. And a team like Wrexham really exposed that in the last game. Every time the ball went in the area, it was men against boys, really. And maybe Charlton will look to do something similar. They've got, obviously, Matt Godden, who's back fit now, and he's an excellent player at getting on the end of crosses. So I'd be interested to see what they do. It's been a great start for Charlton, hasn't it? They'll be just looking to build on it through three wins. Haven't conceded yet. More aggressive, better pressing, better organised. Just much, much tougher to play against than they were previously. And, you know, he's signed in some good players. You know, he's got Luke Berry from Luton. He's got Alan Campbell this week from Luton as well. So, yeah, it's coming together. Not creating a lot. I think they've been the opposite of Luton. It's like they've been super clinical, almost finishing. I think they've finished 1 in 5 shots, which is why they've been able to win these games. But they're not giving much away. And that's a great platform, isn't it, to build what I think Charlton fans are starting to think might be a promotion campaign. So, yeah, good test this for Charlton. If they can go to Reading and win, I think we have to start taking them pretty seriously.
Yeah, we know Nathan Jones is super fit himself and likes his teams to be the same. Maybe some evidence of that in the fact that 3 of the 4 goals they've scored this season have been in the 81st minute or later. Now then, Sam, you saw Crawley exit the Carabao Cup at Brighton on Tuesday. Back to league business for the Red Devils as they host Barnsley. Do you want to give us your take on that tackle on Matt O'Riley that ended his game so abruptly, his debut?
Yeah, well, you never want to go too early when you're commentating. But I thought it was high and I thought it was dangerous live. I probably expected it to be a yellow card. You can understand maybe the referee wanting to just show a little bit of leniency early part of a cup game, lower league team against the Premier League outfit, and give the player the benefit of the doubt. But yeah, it soon became apparent, one or two replays, that was a really poor challenge. And he will be fortunate. I mean, there was no kind of wound when O'Reilly walked off, but he'll be fortunate if there's not some damage there. If he gets away with bruising, he's done well. And Williams is very aggressive. We saw that in the playoffs last year. That's a big part of his game. But he was very fortunate. He was booked for a bad tackle slightly later. There was another incident when he was involved. So he did well to last the 70-odd minutes that he did. And, felt really sorry for O'Reilly having his debut ended after about 9 minutes, I think it was. But aside from that, in a game where they've been defeated 4-0, really enjoyed watching Crawley again. I mean, Brighton are a joy at times, but more individually last night because they were a bit disjointed having made the 11 changes, which you anticipate. Crawley just the one change, so they've got a bit of rhythm. But let's not forget that Scott Lindsay's lost 9 players or whatever from that team that won the playoffs. This is a new group of players from here, there and everywhere, non-league, overseas. In the case of Josh Flynn, I think was a kid at Pompey, but comes in from a team in Holland. He was really impressive. Left-sided centre-half. He had probably 3 opportunities joining in. Chris Wilder, eat your heart out. So they've got some lovely patterns, Crawley. Thoroughly enjoyed watching them. Just missed that end product. And that is so often the case when you've got Premier League up against a League One, League Two outfit. The top boys only need a half opportunity and it's in the net. And that's what we saw last night. Crawley had more of the ball, loads more of the ball in the first half than Brighton. I mean, you can't imagine any side really doing that. So credit Scott Lindsay. New group of players, been on the training ground for a couple of months and already his methods are paying off. And I think it will be a contrast, actually. We know Darrell Clarke is someone players want to play for, a motivator, and the team will be well coached and will be hard to break down, I would suggest. And it's at home where Barnsley have had big problems, and they've continued from the back end of last season into this one. On the road, they took more points than they did at Oakwell last year. It's a kind of new look. Defence is certainly a new goalkeeper. The spine of the team remains. You've got Connell, Phillips, you've got Cosgrove, Waters. You've got, I think, the makings of a decent front pair in there. Went to a diamond, I think I saw last night against Sheffield United, but invariably they are what they have been previously, Barnsley, a 3-5-2. Pretty free scoring last season. Listen, they've not had a particularly good start to the season, but I would envisage they will get better the longer the season goes on. But a tough test for him against a Crawley side who have adapted to life in League One brilliantly.
Yeah, Barnsley have been trying to sign Davis Keylor Dunn from Mansfield, but Nigel Clough confident that interest has fizzled out, in his words. One game in League Two we're going to have a look at. County go to the County ground, but it's not their ground. It's Swindon's ground. It's Swindon Town versus Notts County, basically. Sam, you get to do Swindon because you're in their Hall of Fame. I've got here, they look shambolic again. They've not won yet, and they lost 4-0 against Walsall last time they were at home. It's been a miserable couple of years. Is this season going to be any better?
Well, it's not feeling likely at the moment. I think people are concerned. They've just scored the one goal, haven't they? I was having a little look around today. 0.9 XG, you won't be amazed to find, is the lowest in the division. And unless I was doing something wrong on the particular website I was on the big chances, they're not even registered. They're not even listed, Swindon.
No, so, I had one, yeah.
Will Wright's goal at Chesterfield opening Friday night, worldie. With a worldie. It's not a big chance, though, is it? So they're still to register an opportunity of any note. And we had a chat, and I've got Joe Garner scribbled down here, who, of course, was a goal-getting centre-forward, but he tweeted wanting a Dan Crowley mention. Am I right in saying so, Matt? Just nod or shake your head.
Yes, here we go. You're right.
This is right up your street, and I'll have to give credit to my sometime commentating buddy, Andrew Hawes, who covers Swindon games for this. Dan Crowley has had 6 shots on target alone so far this season. Swindon's whole team, 5. Going into this game at the weekend. So it's clear where Swindon's problems are currently. They're not creating enough. Glatzel, for one, has not continued in the same vein that he showed last season in spells. I could name a few others, but I think Harry Smith is the one that has started life at Swindon quite well. Obviously, defensively, they shored things up the other day against Crewe, and that doesn't seem to be an enormous problem. But that was a game where they needed to get something on the board. Somehow they did so, and they'll have to back it up now in a home game where they're scarred after being absolutely thumped unceremoniously by Walsall a few weeks ago. So this is a big one in his early part of his tenure for Mark Kennedy to start just getting a little bit of feel good around the place, because it's certainly not evident at the moment.
I looked at Notts, Clarkey, and thought this is a really good example of how one result can turn the thinking of Oves like me, who don't really understand these things. But they've gone from, oh, they haven't picked up a win yet, went out of the cup as well, to, hey, unbeaten in 90 minutes across the season, and they won 4-1 in their last game. Stuart Baynard needed that victory against Grimsby last week. The aforementioned Crowley at the double in that. Where do you see Notts this season?
Yeah, I think they've got a chance. I do, because they've got good forwards. And if you've got players that can create chances and score goals, you've always got an opportunity, I think, to win games and get the points you need. Jody Jones is having a storming start to the season. We know about him last year. He was the top assist maker, wasn't he, in the division? He's been on fire. I think he's created 8 chances already this season from right wing back. You've got Dan Crowley, who has been awesome, really. I mean, he was brilliant against Grimsby, but in all 3 games, he's made an impact. No one's created more chances than Dan Crowley this season with 9. The only player level with him is Jack Payne, actually, at Colchester. 13 shots he's had. This is a midfielder, by the way. It's not even really a number 10. He's more of a number 8 this season for Notts County, breaking forward, making things happen. Yeah, he's 13 shots. There's only one player that betters that, and that's Andy Cook at Bradford. So, yeah. And then you've got Alassane Jatta, who I talked about as a potential top scorer this season. He's got a couple already, filling the boots of Macaulay Langstaff. So, yeah, County are going okay. They've got a clear style of play. They'll out-football a lot of teams. If they can be a bit more resilient when they don't have to ball, then they'll be all right. Then they'll finish there or thereabouts, Notts County. The problem last year was they let in way too many. So if Maynard can fix that, County could go up.
That's a prediction of sorts. Let's do some predictions for this weekend's game, shall we? We'll run through what happened last week first, and somebody's going to be very pleased with themselves in a minute. Norwich Sheffield United was the first game up. It finished 1-1. I went 2-2. Adrian went for an away win. Sam went for a home win. So 1 point for me there. Lincoln Mansfield was 4-1 to the Imps against the Stags. I thought that'd be 2-2 as well. It was not. Adrian gets a point because he said that it would be a home victory, albeit 2-1 rather than 4-1. And Sam had that down as a draw. So there is 1 point each to me and Adrian ahead of the last game, which was Crewe versus Swindon. It finished goalless, as predicted by S. Parkin Esquire. I think that might be the first perfect score of the season, Sam.
It is, yeah.
It's congratulations, but it's a bit disappointing that it comes off predicting a 0-0.
Yeah, it's not vintage week all round, is it, from the three of us? But I'll take that one. That was, good reading of the situation there. Two teams, early part of the season, just cancelled each other out and have a snore fest.
Yeah, no, I remembered you saying it. And when the result came in, I actually felt a little bit angry. I felt a little bit upset. That's how competitive I'm starting to get about this. Because Matt will keep hammering me for being last. So did we get that wrong, Matt?
Yes, we did. Yeah. We both went for home wins. I said 3-1, you said 2-0. So Sam,
6-3-2 then to Sam.
Yeah. That's all you need to do, innit? Get a couple of correct ones. Let's see how we get on this week. The first game up is Leeds against Hull, an all Yorkshire affair. I'm going for a 2-0 home win. What about you, Adrian?
3-0. Yeah, comfy for Leeds. Yeah, not really impressed with Hull so far. Bit boring, aren't they?
Killed me.
You were going for 3-0 as well, were you, Sam?
Yeah, I'll go 3-1.
Okay, there's nothing in the rules that which are extensive which says you can't replicate.
Nah,
you
can't have the same. Yeah.
You watch when he, you watch last couple of weeks of the season, he'll just be blocking us, won't he?
Block up.
Another all Yorkshire affair, Rotherham versus Huddersfield. I saw Huddersfield in the week. Tough to get a proper read on them, given that they played with 10 men for more than half the game. But I think that this is going to be a 1-1 draw. And I predict that Steve Evans will not warmly accept the handshake of Michael Duff at the end of the match. Adrian, what do you think?
I was thinking 1-1, but I'm not going to go with it. And I'm actually going to flip-flop and say that Rotherham's miserable start is going to be extended by Huddersfield, who are going to go to the New York and win 2-1.
Wow, okay. If you haven't seen the TikTok that Wickham did on their last week's game, the Steve Evans supercut. It's well worth looking up. It's very funny, very good content. Sam Rotherham Huddersfield, how's it going to finish?
Am I going to predict last just because I'm storming this race?
I'll come to you first for the next one.
I'm going to go 1-0 Rotherham and Steve Evans to be shaking hands with everyone.
Doing this silly little whatever punch.
1-0 Rothers.
All right, last game up is Accrington Colchester in League Two. How's it going to finish, Sam?
Now that is a toss of a coin. Accrington don't play tonight. Colchester play Brentford. They're going to perform admirably and take that into the weekend, and they are going to prevail the Ewes 2-1 at Stanley.
Oh, Adrian, was that what you were going to go for?
Yeah, that's a proper FFS there. I'll go 3-1. Yeah, Aki can't really defend, can they?
I think, Tommy Mooney's lad in attack.
They can score goals. They can score goals, Kanaki. Yeah, I've scored in every game, but they've also let in goals in every game. So yeah, 1-3.
All right, well, they ain't going to score in this game because I've got a 2-0 Colchester victory. Let's see next week who was right and who was wrong. Just about done for today. Remember, you can follow us on X at EFL What. We're also on TikTok and Instagram, What the EFL. If you'd like to leave us some nice words on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your pods, that would really help us out a lot. Thank you to everybody who's done that. We do appreciate it. And let me remind you that our friends at Quinbet have enhanced their UK welcome offer, where you can now get a free bet worth up to £50 and 50 free spins. It is for new customers that sign up only. Check out the full terms and conditions at Quinbet.com/promotions/sports-up-2-50. It's 18+, and remember, always gamble responsibly. Check out gamcare.org. They are the leading provider for gambling support, and they run the National Gambling Helpline. We'll put a link to that offer code in the description of this podcast. Final thing before we go is a tweet of the week. It is back and it comes to us from Fleetwood's Brendan Wyadu, who says, with a couple of pictures of him playing in the win against Rotherham in the cup in midweek, momentum, full stop, top from the lads, ! At FTFC. Clarky, I've included this one because you sometimes get a bit cross with incorrect grammar. And Brendan hasn't put a capital M on momentum, nor a capital T on top after using the full stop after the word momentum. It feels like he's bashed this out quite quickly. Would have hoped that his autocorrect would have put the M and the T in capitals for him. So they've not helped, but he's got to take some share of the responsibility for this.
He has, yeah. I mean, there was an opportunity there to go # momentum, wasn't there? Which I think is always a nice way. It's almost like putting it in capitals. But yeah, he's consistent with both lines, lacking the capital, but it's disappointing. But you know, he's wearing the Fleetwood's kit is Arsenal like, so I'm not going to bury him too much for that.
In the reply, Sam Gideon says, please, I really want to join your academy, help me, 2 praying emojis. I'm not sure that's the best way to get scouted, but good luck to the kid.
Well, he is the skipper, you never know. I've spent far too long looking at Fleetwood's previous results to see if in fact it qualifies for a momentum shout. Five unbeaten, 3 wins, 2 draws in all competitions, and just a solitary opening day defeat against Wrexham, that's momentum. Momentum with a capital M.
Yeah.
All right.
So he's done it right. Yeah.
Yeah. Good on him. I mean, it's at Brendan Wyadu, like wired with the letter U on the end. Go and follow him because he's only got 3,400 followers, and no professional footballer should have fewer followers than me. Follow us as well if you would like. Join us again next week for another show. That's going to do it for today then. Thanks to Adrian and Sam as ever, and to you for joining us. We'll catch up with you again next week. Bye for now.